a reduced set. As evening fell, Prometheus stood and stretched with a yawn and that special groan of weariness and satisfaction that follows a long session of concentrated labour. The afternoon sun had warmed his work into the supple, malleable consistency known in the world of ceramics as cheeseware. This was perfect timing on Prometheus's part, for if the finished creations had been exposed to fiercer midday heat, they would have dried into biscuitware, rendering them too friable and frangible for any of the last-minute modifications that his royal and divine patron would be sure to demand. Longer ears, twice the number of genitals, that kind of thing. Gods are nothing if not capricious. And here, unless his own ears deceived him, came the king of the gods now, crashing through the thicket in loud conversation with someone. Prometheus could make out an answering voice, female, low and measured. Zeus had brought along Athena, his favourite child. "Your father, the emperor god, the world knows," Prometheus could hear him saying. "Zeus the all-powerful, yes. Zeus the all-conquering, certainly. Zeus the all-knowing, of course. Zeus the all-modest? Zeus the creator, though. Doesn't that have a ring?" "Quite a ring." "Now then, the river bank should be just over there. Let's call him." "Oh, Prometheus!" Roosting weaver birds rocketed into the air, squawking in alarm. "Prometheus!" "Over here," Prometheus called. "But be careful, because—" Too late. Breaking out through the trees into the clearing, Zeus had, in his excitement, stepped onto the row of exquisitely fashioned figures drying on the bank. With a cry of fury and despair, Prometheus hurried forward to survey the damage. "You clumsy oaf!" he cried. "You've destroyed them! Look!" No one else in creation could get away with talking to Zeus like that. Athena was astonished to see her father bow his head in meek apology. On inspection, things were not quite as bad as Prometheus had feared. Only three of the figures were beyond repair. He prized these from the mud, the squashed clay still bearing the imprint of Zeus's enormous toes. "Oh, good," said Zeus cheerfully. "The rest are fine. That's plenty. Let's get on, shall we?" "But look at these," said Prometheus, holding up the squashed and ruined statuettes. "The little green, violet, and blue creatures were just about my favourites. We've still got the black, brown, ivory, yellow, reddish, and what have you. That's enough, surely." "I really loved that shade of cobalt blue." Athena was looking down at the intact figures, which lay glowing in the dying rays of the sun. "Oh, Prometheus, they are perfect," she said, in the mild voice that commanded more attention than the roars and screams of the other Olympians. Prometheus cheered up at once. Praise from Athena meant everything. "Well, I did pretty much put my heart and soul into them." "Fine job, really fine," said Zeus. "Formed by a great titan from Gaia's clay, they are held together by my royal saliva, and fired by the sun, and shall be brought to life by the gentle breath of my daughter." It was Metis, always inside Zeus, who had sparked the thought in him that it should be Athena who brought these creatures to life. She would breathe into each one, literally inspiring them, with some of her great qualities of wisdom, instinct, craft, and sense.